And I changed the second part of the title a little bit, because there are some things that I think were important to cover that another title might be more helpful to. So I decided to call it Replacing Nutty Ideas with Self-Affirmation, but still looking at self-esteem, all a part of how we feel about ourselves. What's going on? Sometimes we've heard messages about ourselves in our early lives, early years of growing, and maybe even more recent years of growing, too, that sort of stick with you. They're like glue. You know, crazy glue, you can't get it off. They give all these warnings on the tube. Be very careful in its use because you can't get it apart, and you get it on your hands. You might stick your hands together. Well, that's sometimes things we hear about ourselves get adhered to us with crazy glue, and they don't leave. And it might be the kind of saying that somebody may have said way back, boy, you certainly are clumsy, aren't you? Or can't you ever do anything right? And that sometimes sticks with us. For those of us who are parents or grandparents, we might think of the kinds of things we're still saying to our children, or that we even say, and if we don't have anything to do with children, it's okay, this is still an important topic, because it's also what do we say to ourselves? When you make a mistake, do you go, oh, how dumb, what a stupid, idiotic thing to do, how could I be? So fill in the blank. Or do you say, well, that's not exactly what I had planned. I wonder what went wrong, or what could I learn from it to do differently next time? Gives yourself a very different feeling about what happened. Are you a victim or a victor? Are there possibilities? I'd like to read a little statement from Virginia Satir, who died recently, but marvelous person in the whole area of family therapy, self-esteem work. And this is a paper that she wrote on My Declaration of Self-Esteem back in 1970. And I want you to think about it, because I want to process it a little bit when we finish. What does it say to you when you hear what I'm going to read? What is uncomfortable? What might you want to argue about? What might you say, hey, Virginia, that's off base. We can do that. So just listen and collect your thoughts, evaluate it. See what it says to you, positive or negative. Not everything that's printed is correct, remember. I want to see what you hear from it. My declaration of self-esteem, I am me. In all the world, there is no one else exactly like me. There are persons who may have parts like me, but no one adds up exactly like me. Therefore, everything that comes out of me is authentically mine because I alone chose it. I own everything about me, my body, including everything it does, my mind, including all its thoughts and ideas, my eyes, including the images they behold. My feelings, whatever they may be, anger, joy, frustration, love, disappointment. My mouth and all the words that come out of it, polite, sweet, or rough, correct or incorrect. My voice, loud or soft. Angry, questioning. And all my actions, whether they be to others or to myself. I own my fantasies, my dreams, my hopes, my fears. I own all my triumphs and successes, all my failures and mistakes. Because I own all of me, I can become intimately acquainted with me. By so doing, I can love me and be friendly with me in all my parts. I can then make it possible for all of me to work in my own best interests. I know there are aspects about myself that puzzle me and other aspects that I do not know. But as long as I'm friendly and loving to myself, I can courageously and hopefully look for the solutions to the puzzles and for ways to find out more about me. However I look and sound, Whatever I say and do, whatever I think and feel at a given moment in time is me. This is authentic and represents where I am at that moment in time. When I review later how I looked and sounded, what I said and did, and how I thought and felt, some parts of me may turn out to be unfitting. I can discard that which is unfitting and keep that which proved fitting and invent something new for that which I discarded. I can see, hear, think, say, and do, and choose. I have the tools to survive, to be close to others, to be productive, and to make sense and order out of the world of people and things around me, outside of me. I own me, and therefore I can engineer me. I am me, and I am okay. That's a statement by Virginia Satir. Now, what did it say to you? What response did you have to it? Anyone? Overwhelming? Exciting? Puzzling?
Some things are very encouraging about claiming responsibility for actions and for what I would see or do. And I'll stop there.
Encouraging that, hey, I don't have to wait for someone to do this for me.
I don't have to let someone tell me that this is mine.
Yeah, I can own it.
And I think the idea, you know, of focusing on affirming what is good about us, recognizing that, you know, the things that maybe we would like to change can be changed. I found that fairly positive.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel overwhelmed when it says, I own everything about me, including my body, my mind, my feelings, my mouth, my voice, and all my actions? Sometimes we have learned through our years of living, and kids learn this very quickly, that it's not my fault. The devil, who was it says, the devil made me do it? Skip Wilson? It's not my fault, the devil made me do it. It's not my fault. If you wouldn't have done, or if you would have done, then, you know, this wouldn't have happened to me. You know, you wouldn't have hurt my feelings. I work as a family life educator for a family counseling agency in Kitchener, Ontario. And I do a variety of programs throughout the year in a variety of places, including churches and schools and community centers, wherever I get a request or wherever I can get a door open. And whether it's a parenting course or a course on self-esteem or personal growth, I get the feeling, and it's been my own experience too, I've learned a lot since I've started teaching more courses on self-esteem, about my own self-esteem, and where I was willing to put my self-esteem, usually in someone else's hands, waiting for them to compliment me about something, waiting for them to say, hey, that's pretty good, or I enjoyed what you did, or whatever, rather than letting that be the kind of frosting on the cake, a kind of outside affirmation, but doing some self-affirmation that said, hey, that really went pretty well, or, yeah, there were some good things about that I really want to do again. A couple of other things that I would like to do would be, in a sense, that's why the title for this one has changed. I felt comfortable about the first one that I did 2 weeks ago on where does it all begin? It really begins with you, with me, with ourselves. And that tape is in the library. There is a variety of good things on it. But I picked up the book Growing Again by Jean Yelsey Clark. I've used her book called Self-Esteem, A Family Affair by Jean Yelsey Clark for the first couple of sessions, and I've used it in the last couple of years that I've been doing self-esteem programs. And your child self-esteem by Dorothy Corkill Briggs. This is a classic. It's been around for a long while. Back when I was doing graduate work, it had come out. This is in the originally published in 1970. For anyone who's a parent, who really has concern, or even a grandparent, these three books are outstanding. You could pick up any one of them, and it would be well worth your time in reading. Family Ties That Binds by Ronald Richardson is another one. It's called A Self-Help Guide to Change Through Family of Origin Therapy. For those of us who are mostly dealing with ourselves, with our children grown, and sometimes puzzled about why am I down in the dumps, or why do I kick myself so often, why am I not happy with what I'm doing, that might be a helpful one to look at, to recognize why we may be telling ourselves negative things instead of positive things.
Maybe I missed it, but I didn't hear anything in the statement where my self-esteem also requires my acknowledging my need for assistance or a need for somebody else.
You mean in this statement here that we first read? No, she doesn't really say something about I own, but in a sense, you can fill in the lines that because I own my body, my feelings, my thoughts, we might be able to say to somebody, hey, I need to get something off my chest. Do you have a chance to listen? Or I'd like to try out some ideas with you. Or I really need your support in such and such. That's the kind of taking ownership. Is that the kind of support, the request that you were wondering about?
Yes, otherwise it comes out sounding rather egotistic to me.
Egotistic, not egotistic from the sense that, boy, aren't I good?
Yeah, I can handle anything.
Well, I think it could come out that way. I see it from a different sense in saying, I need to handle what my needs are because I'm the only one responsible. I'm the main one to know what my needs are. And unless I can share them with someone else, they won't know what my needs are. Any of you have a crystal ball? Any of you grow up with a registered psychic as a parent? You know, somebody who could foretell the future? Could read palms, hands, ball, or whatever, tell whatever? I didn't either. Did any of you ever get all you ever wanted? Everything, you know, from the time you can remember, whatever you wanted, did you get it from your parents? I sometimes think kids nowadays can say, yeah, I've gotten it, because I think some parents do give them everything. But there are other things, you know, other than the material things, that we may need to really ask for. And I welcome your comment about this, because it brings up that important point that sometimes we need to be aware of what our needs are. It's important for us to be aware of what our needs are, and that we may have to ask someone for help in meeting those needs. And that's our right and our responsibility. We are the only ones that are going to know what our need is or what our needs are. But others cannot second guess them. We can't expect them. How many of you know partners or who have heard, maybe even parents say it to kids or kids say it to parents, when there's some emotional response going on, whether it's worry or sadness or fear or whatever, and the other person says, what's wrong? And the first person who's got this emotional need says, well, if you really love me, you'd know what I need. I mean, we can guess, but unless we check it out, we may be filling the wrong need. Because a guess is just a guess. It can be affirmed or it can be corrected.
Do we have to learn to identify our own needs, though?
Sure. That's one of our main responsibilities, because we are the authority on us. I've been married for 28 years, but I certainly don't know every need that my husband has. And I don't think he knows every need that I have. We still have to be able to identify, and that's where that taking that responsibility taking responsibility for ourselves is important. To be able to say, oh, I need to just sit and think quietly for a while. Can I have 10 minutes of silence? Or I need to have somebody to talk to for 5 or 10 minutes. Do you have that much time to listen? And most of the time when I want to share something, I don't want 5 different ways to solve it. You know, I just want somebody to hear how I'm feeling. I may have, and in the process I may come up with my solution. Somewhat what I generally feel, and maybe others have some of the same feeling too, when I need to, you know, something terrible, horrible, very bad, no good has gone on in the day, whether it's at work, whether it's at home, whether it's whatever, and I just want to talk to a friend or my partner, and I'll just get started, and they'll say, well, why didn't you do such and such? How come you didn't? Why don't you try? Did you? Why? You know, I just feel like getting up and walking away. Anyone else have those same feelings? A lot of nodded yeses? You just want to be heard. Because when somebody starts giving me all the solutions, I begin to feel, you don't trust me to handle my own problems. You don't think I'm capable. You've got to come in and rescue. And I'm not, much of the time, I don't need rescue. If I really say, I am stymied, I have no idea what to do. Do you have any suggestions? That's opening the door and I'll let them come in. But most of the time when that door is closed and I just want them to listen and they're going to push it open, I'm going to close it back again. And I'll begin to defend myself rather than deal with the issue, rather than talk about it. So we do have responsibilities for ourselves. We may at times have to go outside of ourselves to find that support system that we need. No, we're not completely independent. We live in a world that promotes independence, but it's really interdependence. Nobody goes out and raises every bit of grain that they need, all the chickens, pigs, and cows that and beef that they need for all their meat and milk, and churns their own butter anymore. I mean, we may raise the wheat, and we may even grind it and make our own bread, but we probably buy milk and butter and cheese and the meat already cut up and a couple of canned goods that have come from someone else. There are some few rare people that are really completely independent, but not very many. So we want to build on that interdependence, but also realizing that we're not completely dependent either. That doesn't mean I don't need you. That means that I don't have to have you carry my burden as well as your own. It's a heavy burden. When the man assumes the complete head of the household responsibilities and keeps control over everything, no wonder men die of heart attacks sooner. That's an awesome responsibility. And we have other people with capable brains and minds. Not to be minimized. It's getting a little bit off, but that's part of self-esteem too, saying, I feel okay about myself and you're okay too. And so are you, all of you. In fact, I think it's Jack Canfield in a tape series that he does for Career Track on self-esteem and peak performance that says, you're all winners. Every one of you won the most important race in your life. Everyone in this room is a winner. There's no losers here. No losers at all. You've won the most important race, and that is that you won the sperm race. You are the 1 in 500 million that became the you. If it would have been a different sperm that connected with the ovum, it would be a different, it wouldn't be you, or you'd be a different form of you. Because each sperm carries different genetic qualities with it. It may have made, if you're a female, it may have made you a male because it may have had the other, XY, the other chromosome. Vice versa, if you're a male, might have made you a female, if it would have been a different sperm that connected with you. So you're all winners. You all begin as winners. And I like the little buttons that says, God doesn't make junk. Another reason to say, hey, you're okay. Like the statement, Sydney Simon has done a neat little book that's called The IALAC Story, or A Modern Allegory on the Classical Put-Down. And IALAC is, I believe, is something that we each have indelibly stamped on us as a gift from our Creator. Most of us don't know about it, but it's there. Most of us don't act on it or believe it or accept it, but it's there. It's a gift, not earned. You don't have to pay for it, but it's there. And it says, I am lovable and capable. And you are. You each have capabilities. You each are lovable. Sometimes we minimize our own lovability by saying, well, you know, I just feel so uncomfortable. You want to crawl behind something and not have to talk to too many people. One of the first times that my husband and I used this with a marriage enrichment group in a church some years ago, we asked the people if they had any idea what it stood for. And there is a group of about like this, and perhaps about the same age range, and puzzled faces. And finally, this one man's face began to sparkle, and you could just see this twinkle come in his eye, and his face began to brighten, and he raised his hand, and he said, I know what it stands for. It stands for I am Lutheran and cuddly. And that's fine, too. If it fits, wear it. It's one of its possibilities. There are a number of them. But it also stands for you being lovable and capable. You're loving and caring. You're learning about children. It's a variety of things. One mother said in a parent group, I know what that stands for. It stands for I'm losing all control. No, only positive signs, only positive ones. But sometimes we go through a day and things will happen that just tears us all apart. Somebody says, oh, you bungled it again. Or can't you ever get anything done on time? Can't you be ready when we're supposed to be ready? That for supper again. Have you left the car empty on gas and I have to get out to this meeting 20 miles away and I don't have time to stop for the gas? Or look at all that mess you left in the middle of the floor. Can't you ever put anything of your work away? Remember you promised you were going to do this faithfully by 5 p.m. tonight and nothing's been started on it yet. Can't you ever keep your agreements? And then there's nothing left of that name tag that says you are lovable and capable, that you're okay. Maybe somebody comes along and says, hey, thanks, and one little piece can come up. But wouldn't it be nice if in our work with our families and with each other that we could keep this name tag together in proper order and maybe even expand on it a little bit more with encouragement instead of discouragement, with description of I need to leave at such and such a time. Maybe you didn't know it, but French fried potatoes is off my diet, or I thought I told you once that I hated parsnips. Just a reminder for next time. That we can give information in a way that doesn't, that isn't a put down to someone else. And we can also take that information without receiving it as a put down. That someone can, what's the old children saying, sticks and stones may hurt my bones, but words may not assail me. How many of you heard that in your growing up? Raise your hand. How many have never heard it? Is there anyone here who has not heard it? Do we ever act on it? Don't remember it very often, do we? It's there, but it's hidden. And if we could bring that up and say, gee, well, maybe they've got a complaint, or things must not have gone very well for them today, or we need to problem solve this, or well, they're really upset and angry, but that doesn't mean that I have to join them in that. I can look at what part of that problem I need to work on, but I don't need to take it personally that my me as a person is not okay. What I did may not have been very okay. And as parents and as grandparents, we need to remember that too, that you are not your actions. You're okay. Not all your actions may be okay, but you're still okay. We are not defined by our actions. Someone who steals at one time may be labeled a thief for the rest of one's life, but they may have stolen something because the family was really very hungry. It was food for the family. Not right. They may have found another way to solve that problem, but they solved it in a way that wasn't very helpful. Needed, but not very helpful. But that doesn't mean that they need to be labeled a thief for the rest of their life. I doubt if there's anyone in this group who has not picked up something from somewhere, a paperclip from the floor, in a sense, might be taking it away from someone. That we haven't taken something from someone, maybe even their goodwill, without repaying them in some way. So we wouldn't want to be labeled thieves for that. So we can say that person stole something rather than label them indelibly for the rest of their life as a thief. So we want to look at that sense too, in dealing with our children, that we look at their actions and not label them. I like the button also that says labels disable. I think they do. Or label jars, not people. I think that's also a helpful one. You can say, I don't like to see, hear you swear. Or I don't like to see that mess in the middle of the floor. But when I say, what a messy kid you are, always leaving everything in the middle of the floor, or a partner. What happens is that once they get the name, they tend to play the game. Okay, I'm messy. Doesn't matter, I can leave things. That's just the way I am. How many of you have ever heard someone say in explaining something, that's just the way I am. I can't change. If you can't change, you're dead. Really. Dead people are the only ones who can't change. If you're alive and breathing, change is part of your life. Or you'd still be driving the car you had in 1980. I'm sure there aren't very many people who still have a 9-year-old car around. Somebody bought it secondhand from somebody else, or that still wears the same pair of shoes regularly every day that they wore back in 1975. You know, my feet are growing. I mean, so we change. We change our underwear every day. I mean, there's a lot of things that we change. And so we may need to begin to change a way that we look at how we hear things and how we say things. And what I'd like to do is look at a couple of affirmations. Some affirming things that we might say. I think it's a Self-Esteem and Family Affair has a nice section in the back that says, early messages I choose to hear, and it's an exercise that you might work with. But some of the things, some of them are not always so helpful and some of them are. But things that might be helpful to hear as well as to say is, I like to hug you. You are beautiful. I like watching you put your puzzle together. It's okay to go exploring. I'll still be here. How are you? I just got into a whole line of negative ones, which I don't want to read. It's okay to feel mad, but you are not to hit yourself or anyone else. That's scary to say that, because we often think if we allow somebody to be angry, we've got to stop being angry, stop being mad. We can't control feelings. Feelings aren't right or wrong. Feelings are okay. Feelings aren't judgeable. But how we put them into action is. So to say you're feeling angry because you're disappointed, dismayed, disheartened, discouraged, that's an acceptable feeling. But we have some choices as to how we can put it into action. My right to act on my feeling of being frustrated ends before the tip of your nose. I don't have the right to hit you. Because I'm angry. I can tell you I am really frustrated when I see such and such done or undone. But I don't have the right to call you a name, to tear you down, to make you not okay. And you have the right not to accept whatever I throw at you in a put-down way. So there are some affirmations that are very helpful. But here are some that I want us to work through, to think about, too. It's called 11 Beliefs That Will Not Cause Problems. And I think these are affirmations that we can say to ourselves. Affirmations are most helpful if we put them in the present tense and in an action. A word that begins in ing, like I am working to show care and concern to others. I am working at being okay about myself, feeling good about myself. We might want to change these around into a more active statement. But here's, it's a kind of new, another version of the commandments that we might want to say regarding our self-esteem, only there are 11 of them instead of 10. Instead of saying, everybody must love me, to be able to say, everybody doesn't have to love me. I am okay, even without everybody loving me. It's impossible, it's unrealistic to think everyone in the whole world is going to love me. Not everybody, my life doesn't touch everyone else in the whole world. You know, I know very few people in Seattle. So there's a lot of people there who don't love me. So it's okay. And I'm still okay, and they're still okay. And even if I have a relative or a friend who says, boy, you're not my friend any longer, I can be sad about that. And I might try to do some problem solving, but I still need to be able to say to myself, I'm still okay. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with my friend. We can try to work through this. My friend is still okay, and I'm still okay. When I start slinging mud at my friend will generally sling mud back at me. Don't you do that to protect yourself. And then we've got a bigger mess going. The second one is, it's okay to make mistakes. Is there anyone here who hasn't made a mistake today? Now, I heard the bell ring at 5:15, and I thought, oh, I don't know, maybe some kids were at that, but supper's not until 5:30. So I read a little bit longer, and then realized nobody's outside, everybody's sitting down. We make mistakes, and it's okay. I think it's Jack Canfield also that says, you can't learn less with regard to making a mistake. Well, I think you can if you want to bury your head in the sand or blame someone else, or pretend that it never happened. You won't learn anything from it. Then you can, well, you might not learn less, but you just won't learn anything more. But we can learn from all of our mistakes. And instead of hitting our forehead and kicking our behinds, we can say, what went wrong with this thinking? What can I do differently next time that I can learn from it? And build your own self-esteem of saying, I can learn from my mistakes. I don't have to be perfect. No one is perfect. We wouldn't need a forgiving God if everyone were perfect. So it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay for other people to make mistakes. Sometimes we allow ourselves to make them, but we don't allow anyone else. 3, other people are okay, and I'm okay too. There's several books that are written about I'm okay, you're okay, the four basic positions. I'm okay, you're okay. I'm okay, you're not okay. I'm not okay, you're okay. I'm not okay, and you're not okay. So to be able to recognize that we're all okay, we're all lovable and capable. Even though our sign may be torn to pieces, it's still there indelibly on us. So I'm okay and you're okay. And to be able to say I'm okay doesn't mean that I'm going to be puffed up and say, boy, and I'm better than the rest of you. Because that puts down the you're okay part. And most often people who do that do it out of a sense of emptiness, feeling really not okay themselves, and that in order to be okay at all, they've got to step on someone else. When you puff yourself up and say, in a sense, I'm better than anyone else, and they're not okay, that's not the I'm okay position. That's really a revision of the I'm not okay, and I'm not so sure whether you're okay or not okay, but I got to step on you in order to try to feel okay. And that may not be the most helpful. That other people aren't necessarily bad and need to be punished in order for me to be okay. They can be okay too. They have their needs to meet, I have my needs to meet. Another important one is I don't have to control things. I will survive if things are different than I want them to be. Now, I like peace in this world. I'd like to be able to control that peace. I may not be able to, but I can work toward it. That doesn't mean I need to stop working. But I don't need to go crawl in a hole or build a bomb shelter, which wouldn't be very helpful anyway in this day of modern technology. But it might be better for me to work in other ways to create peace. Peace first within myself, within my family, with those around me, and then hoping that it'll spread out into the world. I can work toward changing things. I don't have to be always in control. Some parents have a hard time with that one, that if I'm not in control, kids are. Well, I don't think that they need to look at it from their side too. They don't need to be as much in control. That we can work together on getting things done. And I think one of the problems that happens, creates the most difficulties between parents and child, but whether they're adult or young children, is trying to control them. We can, Cahill Gilbron says, you cannot own your own children. You can never control your child. They may be of you, but not under your control. Try getting a 15-month-old to go potty when they have no idea what it's all about. It may be an accident that they do, but you can't demand and control them. You might be sitting there for 2 hours. And finally, after 2 hours, they finally go potty. You can say, well, I controlled them. Well, they controlled you. You sat with them for 2 hours. I mean, there are some things we may work on saying, how can we work together to get this to work out? But negotiation and planning together and problem solving will work a lot better than demanding, threatening, ordering, warning, bribing for that control. I am responsible for my day. How many of you get upset when somebody says, have a nice day today? And you want to say, I don't plan to. Nobody, you know, the response is, nobody's going to tell me how to have my day, or that's such an automatic thing. But I do have to be responsible for how I feel, for what I do. No one can make me feel anything that I choose not to feel. Eleanor Roosevelt said that a long time ago. No one can make you feel inferior without your permission. So when we're automatic button is pushed and we tend to say, you make me feel so angry, remember, you chose it. That's a difficult thing to accept too. I don't choose my feelings. Well, I think we have more control over them than we think we do. We have responsibility for acting on them and for choosing what we do with the feelings when we recognize them. But other people don't carry a remote control around for me. And I don't carry a remote control around for someone else to make them feel anything. That doesn't mean that we can be nasty, mean, and sarcastic because we can't make them feel anything. Somebody says, you've just put me down, and you say, no, you chose it yourself. I think we still have responsibilities to be that lovable and capable person, to help enrich the lives of other people rather than tear them down. I can handle it when things go wrong. I can learn from my mistake. The sky won't fall in, things will be okay, I can make amends, I can make apologies, I can learn from the mistake so that it doesn't happen again. It's important to try. Not I will think about trying, but I am trying. Put it actively. I am working at being positive. I am working at reducing self-put-downs. I am working at accepting myself and others. I am capable. That's the next one. I don't need anyone to take care of my problems. I may be free to ask for assistance when that is needed from someone else. But I am responsible for knowing what my problems are and for initiating action on them. I can't assume somebody else will take care of that problem. Because whenever we tend to assume that somebody ought to know, somebody ought to solve it for me, if they really love me and really cared for me, they do it for me without my telling. Because whenever we tend to assume that somebody ought to know, this is what usually happens. We can divide the word assume and tend to make an ass out of both you and me. Apologize if that language offends you, but that's part of the assume that we need to remember. It's a very descriptive way of remembering it. Not to assume, check things out. Talk about it, problem solve it, work it out. I can change. I am changing. I don't have to be a certain way because that's how somebody else will love me better if it's not in my best interest. And when we say to our kids, oh, I'll love you so much when you do the dishes for me, or I love you so much when you telephone me once a week, what we're teaching children, oh, I love it so much when you put things away, we're teaching children that love comes only by doing things, not for being. And then what happens as these kids grow older is that they begin to try to get love by acting on it. If I do such and such, will you love me? And we have a lot of young people get into a lot of problems in their teenage years because they try to gain acceptance from the peer crowd by doing what the peers want them to do. And that may not always be what parents want them to do.
You said, I love it when you put things away. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's okay, but not saying, I love you when you do this. Really?
I think it might even, to make it absolutely clear, it might be more helpful to say, it's really helpful when you put things away. Mm-hmm. And I love you for being you. I love to have you around, even if you're clinging to my knee. It's hard to say it then, but that may be what they most need to hear at that time. They may not hear the change, that one change in word, because the kids will catch the overhead word, so to speak. Other people, I can change. I am capable. I can change. Other people are capable also. I can't solve other problems for them, other people's problems for them. I can care and be of help sometimes, but I can't do everything for them. And I can be flexible. There's more than one way of doing something. So those are some important things to tell ourselves that I'm okay and to encourage our own self-esteem. There are some other things I'd like to go through fairly quickly, and then we can have some conversation about them. We might need to remember to take responsibility for ourselves. No one else is going to take responsibility for developing your self-esteem. That's your privilege, your responsibility, an opportunity. And when children are little, parents and the adults around them are the ones who are most responsible for helping that child to feel a sense of capability and and acceptability. But as we become adults, we take over that responsibility ourselves. And there are some things through the various stages, and in the Growing Up Again book, subtitles Parenting Ourselves, Parenting Our Children by Jean Elsley Clark. There are some marvelous affirmations here also that I'd like to share with you that help us to recognize what's important at different stages, but also to realize that we go through these different stages over and over again in our lives. So the stage of from birth to 6 months is one on being. Children learn, in a sense, to be. And remember, they come with a blank slate, so to speak. Don't know how to do anything except the sucking reflex. So some of the affirmations that we might say, partly to help ourselves accept this new creature, for the birth to 6 months old, is to say, I'm glad you're alive. You belong here. What you need is important to me. We may not always want the things they need at the time they need them. But for parents who brought them into the world, we need to be able to say, what you need is important to me. I'm glad you are here. You can grow at your own pace, no matter how much we want them to quickly grow and start walking until they're ready to. They won't be doing it. You can feel all of your feelings. When they get mad or something, we can't stop. So often parents tell their kids, stop crying, or I'll give you something to really cry about. Well, how would you feel about that if some adult, when you were really crying over some mistake you made or some difficulty or some loss, said, stop crying, I'm going to really give you something to cry about. I'll either take more away or I'll paddle you, whatever it is. You're not going to feel very happy about that. And you're probably not going to stop crying. Or if you do, you stuff a lot of it and you're going to be full of resentment. I love you and I care for you willingly. From 6 to 18 months, you can explore and experiment and I will protect and support you. Most often we don't want to have them really experiment too much. We go to playpens. You can use all of your senses when you explore. Children learn from their experiences of their senses, and we need to recognize that and to modify the environment so that they're freer to explore. So if your grandparents, when your grandkids come to visit, take the breakables off the coffee table. Don't say, you learned not to touch them when you were 12 months old. And then you wondered why they didn't do as well in school as they did later. Well, I don't want to put a blame on you, but sometimes kids, when they're stopped from early exploration, will cease to explore at a later time. And that's how we learn as kids. You can do things as many times as you need to learn. You can know what you know. You can be interested in everything. I like to watch you initiate and grow and learn. I love you when you are active and when you are quiet. That's the doing stage for children 6 to 18 months. The toddler stage, 18 months to 3 years, is a stage where they develop thinking ability. I'm glad you are starting to think for yourself. How often do we say that to kids so that they're encouraged to think? It's okay for you to be angry, and I won't let you hurt yourself or others. We want to control that anger, but most often it'll go away quicker if you can accept the reason for their being angry. But still you can set limits of saying, but I can't allow you to hurt yourself or others. You can say no and push and test limits as much as you need to, because that's how you learn. And we can find alternatives ourselves for saying no to them. It's no wonder kids at age 2 say no all the time. That's what they've heard for 2 years. That's the easiest. You know, we think they learn to say mama and dada first, but I think they really say no, only we don't want to listen to it. Because they've heard us say it so often. No, don't touch. You can learn to think for yourself, and I will think for myself. I don't have to get my sense of self-esteem from how well my child behaves or how early they're potty trained or how early they started to walk. None of those have anything to do with later intelligence. It only means that particular muscle and reflex ability developed at a certain stage, earlier or later. It has nothing to do with the mind. But how they hear us talking about what they're doing gives them ideas about what they are capable of. You can't walk yet and you're 12 months old, or your sister walked at 10 months. How come you're not walking at 15? That has nothing to do with intelligence, but they'll hear that message that they're not quite accepted yet. They're not really capable. They're not really lovable. And that's not what you want to give them. You can think and feel at the same time. You can know what you need and ask for help, back to our earlier statement. You can become separate from me, and I will continue to love you. That's scary sometimes, but that's what that important stage is to separate. You can explore who you are and find out about other people too. Little kids pulling out glasses, checking your ear, punching your nose. I feel that done so often to them. It's an experience. And they'll do it to other kids, and the other ones will think they're biting them or hurting them, and they'll start screaming, and you'll start yelling at them and say, what did you do to each other? The kids at that stage learn about other people through that sense, and what they may be trying to experiment may not be what we think they're experimenting on. The next stage, all of your feelings are okay with me. That's important at any age. This is mainly 3 to 6, where they're learning identity and power. You can learn what is pretend and what is real. Sometimes we have a hard time as adults recognizing that too. We have expectations, pretend expectations for each other. And that, expectations, is probably the one thing that causes the most problems with self-esteem building. We have expectations of other people and what we think they expect of us. Actually, it's not what we think about ourselves. It's not what other people think about ourselves, about us. It's what we think they think about us that we tend to internalize and worry about and identify ourselves with. And we need to revise that. This back to assuming what the other person's thinking about me. You can think before you say yes or no and learn from your mistakes. Ages 6 to 12. You can trust your intuition to help you decide what to do, to learn and develop that inner control. You can find a way of doing things that work for you. You can learn the rules that help you live with others. It's applicable at all ages. You can learn when and how to disagree. It's okay to disagree with each other. We may learn how to negotiate some middle point. You can think for yourself and get help instead of staying in distress. Feeling everybody hates me, guess I'll go eat some worms. Remember that little song? Big fat juicy ones? Guess I'll eat some worms. I love you even when we differ. I love growing with you. I've learned a lot of things from our two daughters who are now 24 and 27. I still continue to learn a lot from them. I think it's reciprocal. Ages 13 to 19, you can know who you are and learn and practice skills for independence. It's appropriate at all ages. You can learn the difference between sex and nurturing and be responsible for your needs and behavior. That's often a real problem for growing. It's not just adolescence any longer, it's pre-adolescence. They get nurturing and sex mixed up and feel that to have sexual intercourse is a way of getting nurturing, that they don't feel they're getting somewhere else. And they're two different things. You can develop your own interests, relationships, and causes. You don't need to like all the things I like, because I probably didn't like all the things my parents liked. But you'll find that statistics, research has shown that kids will generally agree and accept at least 75% of all that their parents stood for. That's pretty good odds. You can learn to use old skills in new ways. You can grow in your maleness and femaleness and still be dependent at times. I look forward to knowing you as an adult. My love is always with you. I trust you to ask for my support when you need it. And as adults, these are important. This next set is important. This is the interdependent stage. You can be creative, competent, productive, and joyful. Every one of you. You can trust your inner wisdom. You can say your hellos and goodbyes to people, roles, dreams, and decisions, and still be okay. You can finish each part of your journey and look forward to the next. Your love matures and expands. You are lovable at every age. Your needs are important. They are. You can be uniquely yourself and honor the uniqueness of others. You can be independent and interdependent. Through the years, you can expand your commitments to your own growth, to your family, your friends, your community, and to all humankind. You can build and examine your commitments to your values and causes, your roles, and your tasks. What you stood for 10 years ago might be different from what you're standing for now. The causes may have different, there may be different needs, and you can change. You can be responsible for your contributions to each of your commitments. We can say those with an I. I can be responsible for my contributions to each of my commitments. Any of the yous that were said in any of these might be changed to I's as we say them to ourselves. It's helpful to hear other people say them to you, to be able to internalize them, to be able to feel them, to act on them, to say, I'm okay, that I can accept myself, I'm a winner. We can put our hands up in the air and say, I'm enough. Let's do it quickly. I'm enough. Say it to yourself, out loud, everyone. I'm enough. I'm enough. Yeah. Feel comfortable and competent about ourselves and our lives. We have lots to learn. We're capable of learning. We may not be capable of everything, but that's where we're interdependent. We can be capable in learning what needs to be learned. We can be lovable in giving that love and receiving love from other people, and recognize that other people are also lovable and also capable. Comments, questions? Self-esteem, what does it really mean to say, I'm okay, without having to qualify it? Not, I'm okay when I'm at work. I'm okay when other people obey me. I'm okay when you do what I ask, but I'm okay and you're okay. To really mean it. Give you one piece of homework. When you look in the mirror tonight to brush your teeth or wash your face, or when you wake up tomorrow morning and you comb your hair or shave or put on makeup or brush your teeth, whatever, when you look in that mirror, look at yourself and say, I'm okay, and go to yourself. Promise to do that tomorrow, tonight, or tomorrow. Do it once a day. No, it's non-caloric. It's good for your health. It's not going to be harmful in any way. It's no expense, no cost to it. It's easily portable. You don't need any special equipment. If you don't have a mirror, you can always use your own hand and go. Or you can give yourself a hug and say, I'm okay. God doesn't make junk. And affirm yourself. Don't wait for... It's okay if somebody else gives you... It's marvelous around here to give hugs as often as we do. But sometimes you can do... If there's nobody else around, you can give it to yourself. Even if somebody else is around, you can still give it to yourself. Two hugs are better than one. From someone else as well as... Virginia Satir also says, you need 4 hugs a day for basic survival. 8 hugs a day for maintenance. And 12 hugs a day for growth. A lot of us are barely surviving. But you can do it to yourself. You can give yourself those strokes and hugs without feeling egotistic or pompous or whatever. That's nurturing yourself. It's a gift you're giving to yourself. You don't even have to wrap it into a package. You are a good enough package to put your own arms around. So I hope you all feel you're okay, and so is everyone else. Any comments, questions, discussion about this? Let's take a little, we've got a couple minutes of time before we have to go. Or is it 10 minutes? What does it say to you about self-esteem? The most important, one of the most important qualities that influences almost everything else that you do. We can accept the fact that we are a child of God and that God doesn't make junk. We're okay. We don't have to humble ourselves. I think when Carol Hinderly was around, there used to be the statement of, you are the Lord's, with and without the apostrophe. We are children of our Creator, but we are also part of creation. We are lords over what has been created.
Good. One of Pete Stanky's session, he outlined how gender differences start with association or disassociation from the mother. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how that works out in the work that you do. with affirmation and self-esteem.
Yeah, mothers often have a hard time giving themselves affirmation. They feel so much of giving that, you know, that the role is only of giving, and that they've got to get from someone else, and we don't often think of feeding our own selves, that we have to do for everyone else. We have to be that slave, and I'm not sure that's helpful for ourselves or for the children that we're raising or for the partnership to be in an unequal basis or feel that you don't have any respect for yourself. And I think when we put ourselves down, we are rejecting the love of God. As, you know, I'm not, you know, God's love is unconditional. Our love for our children needs to be unconditional. Not we love you when, but I love you. I may not like what you're doing right now, but I love you. You are my child. We want, God says that to us, and we want to say that to our children as well. Unconditionally. I mean, forgiveness is a gift of the Christian church, I think. I feel. And if we're all perfect or, you know, couldn't do anything wrong, weren't supposed to do anything wrong, well, why would we have need for forgiveness then? So I think we need to accept that and to be able to forgive ourselves, not just offer forgiveness to others, but to forgive ourselves as God and recognize that God forgives us and we need to accept it. I remember my husband telling the story about visiting one of his parishioners early in his ministry, and the parishioner just, you know, she, I don't know what had gone on, she just hadn't raised her son properly or whatever, and she was just being terrible, horrible. And she said, you know, God couldn't ever forgive me. And his response, you know, you may not think God has forgiven you, but God has. Whether you accept it or not, God has forgiven you. Don't build a box around yourself.